Yes, we all love Toy Soldiers, 17 to 7 on a Wednesday morning. Nice to have your company wherever you are listening. Remember, like this song, Whitey?
I do. Not my top 235, but it would be around that sort of 300 mark, I reckon.
300? What? Really?
It's a good song.
Who sings it?
Martika or someone.
Martika, correct. Matty Stewart with us. Morning, Matthew.
That's a very creepy, haunting song. I like it too, but there's something about, you know, with the school kids in the background, and it's weird.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, there's something a bit off about Martika's. And there was another song she did too at the same time. I can't remember what it was, but
Love Thy Will Be Done.
Love Thy Will Be Done.
Yes.
Yes.
Is that her? I didn't realise that was her as well.
That's her.
Bunny's boiling in the kitchen there.
Marta Marrero is Martika's name. Marta Marrero. That's her born name. She was born in California. She's a Cuban-American singer. It's got some international influence in the family. She's having a birthday today, Martika. Clearly, because that's why we do this around about this time. How old is Marta Marrero, please, Matthew?
I reckon she'd be 55 now.
I know. Well, that's good. At least she gave us a number
so
today.
So you really sort of... it's like you know her, the way you've answered them.
My kids and I are very big on Martika. And with that other one, Love Thy Will Be Done, we listen to a lot.
My kids and I are very big on Martika. That's a sentence I never thought of.
I drag my kids into the dark side at every opportunity. Have a listen to this creepy woman. I'm a 55 man, and I'm standing by it.
Okay. Whitey, how old's Martika Matamarelo?
Yeah, I'm a bit like Matt. I reckon that's that sort of range. I'm going to go with 52.
52. I can tell you that you are both in the window. Both of you. Congratulations, Matt. You're really there.
Yeah, when it comes to Martika, I'm not going to get it too wrong.
From what I'm sensing from Matt, he knows a lot about Martika.
None of you have got it. Whitey, you're the winner. 53 today for...
But I dragged him into the green zone.
Yeah. You maybe did.
He was going to say 35, and then I went, hey.
Other birthdays today. Tim Horan, Australian rugby legend, is 52 today. Happy birthday to Tim. Jack Johnson, US singer-songwriter, little guitar sort of man. He's 47 today. Jessica Watson, what's she famous for?
She was the young lady that sailed around the world.
Youngest person to sail solo, non-stop and unassisted around the planet on Ella's Pink Lady. That was a while ago. She's 29 today, Jess Watson. 29. Troy Cassadale is 53 today. Richard Clapton is 73 today. Yun Fat Chow, he is a star in the Academy Award winner Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Yun Fat Chow. I think he's the tall man. Not sure.
He's one that should change his name, like we talk about often with these artists.
People giggle when they hear his name. He's got to change it.
Yeah, Yun Fat Chow.
There you go.
That's a giggleable name. Not that we're trying to make fun of him, but it's just a funny name.
It just sounds a bit funny.
It does. Matthew, you sound a bit funny sometimes. What do you got for us? How come you weren't involved in the cup?
Or were you?
Were you cut on the floor?
Cutting room floor. Despite what I thought, no, I wasn't in it. You guys, see, RSN cuts out when I get into the city with the tram line, so I have to go from you guys to my musical selection. So I didn't hear your discussion about the... Sivo said you've been dissecting horse movies.
Well, we were talking about the cup, and
it was a
cricket movie that got us talking, and then the cup came involved, because Blue Eyes was involved, and I didn't know that our man was a prominent fixture.
Well, is he going to be in it? He's not James Franco, is he? So he's not going to be in a blockbuster, is he? He dragged it down, in fact. I controversially didn't rate Ride Like a Girl, I've got to say.
Why is that controversial?
I think it's enough distance now from the premiere, Whitey. I just thought it was telemovie stuff. I just thought it was cliched. And if you'd, you know, every scene was like, okay, you know, here's a scene of misogyny with the female jockey, here's... And even the race footage, everyone said, oh my God, the vision was extraordinary. And with all due respect to Chris Simons, who had a bit to do with it, and he's a superstar freak of a guy, I still didn't get blown away even by that. It was, seen that level of dramatic horsey footage before. And
is it difficult, horse racing movies, to get drama in the actual race scenes?
Well... Hence, I now always default to docos over movies. I think there's so much footage around these days. I think what would have been fantastic would have been a very, very revealing Michelle Payne documentary, you know, a Melbourne Cup documentary. All the characters are still there. All the real footage is still there. But I don't think Rachel Griffiths was... She was wanting to make a movie, obviously, so that's the way we went. But if you were to start from scratch, When We Were Kings, you know, imagine if they made a movie about the Rumble in the Jungle as opposed to the doco.
Well, this is the thing. The 83 World Cup that you were watching is called 83, the Indian Cricket World Cup. And I thought, I just assumed it would have been a doco, but it was a movie of the story, which I don't find overly enticing.
Well, exactly right. I mean... you know, I think that the tennis one with the violent guy.
Sorry, what?
The Oscars man. What's it? Will Smith. That
King Richard.
King Hit. King. See, I think that's worked. Obviously, it's getting rave reviews, but I don't know. Formula One works because it's real footage of what's going on. It's not.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think in some ways, some of it's changed because of the success of some of the things that have been on Netflix or the, you know, the Amazon documentaries or who are the ones that do the things on the Premier League clubs and who are they?
What do you mean, who are they?
Well, who are the company that does them?
That's an Amazon one, isn't it?
Yeah, it might be Amazon.
Yeah, it's Amazon.
Yeah, so where you're getting real footage or even the Michael Jordan documentary, like it's real life. It's not,
and it's readily
available.
It's
not a dramatisation of it.
It's there. It's been created recently, and it's real. So, you know your story about James this morning. I always giggle. You always get a little one that I go, oh, that reminds me of something. There's a learned friend of ours who you may know, who's a lawyer, a lawyer to the racing stars. Let's just call him. We're in Bali about 8 years ago, the Bali Eight, and we'd go for walks every day, and he claimed this ability to tell what time it was by looking at the placement of the sun in the sky without looking at his watch. And he had this unerring ability to get it right. So about 10 times in a row, I'd say, righto, what time is it now? He'd say, 7 minutes to three. I was like, damn it, it's 4 minutes to three. And I ended up owing him such a vast sum of money. But what I got him on was we didn't establish what currency we were dealing in, so I paid him in rupee. I said, here's $20, keep the change. Calculated in rupee.
Was that Crocodile Dundee sort of stuff, where Mick checked the watch before he was asked the question?
Our learned friend claims to have this extraordinary ability, you know, to his relationship with the planet and all that sort of stuff. He just fluked it about 8 times in a row, I swear to God.
It's pretty bloody good.
And I keep forgetting that he could glance at his phone as well, and there's, you know, times on that.
You were taken.
I was taken for a ride. Michael Poy, yesterday he lost his appeal over that, getting the laps wrong at Kyneton, and some really... very emotional sort of quotes from Michael Poy about the context of the situation on the day and his mindset and what had happened and so on. And even the judge, in upholding the original two-month penalty, said, it's hard not to feel sympathy for you. However, the penalty imposed by the steward seems to be fair and reasonable in all the circumstances, and the appeal is dismissed. And then Michael Poy went on to explain... the context of what happened, and you're saying he's remorseful and embarrassed. I was rushed to get there, rushed in, weighed in for the ride. It's no excuse. I should have known the distance. I'm not putting the blame on anyway. The day prior was Mother's Day. I elected to have the day off due to losing my mum early this year. I probably should have had the next day off. I only wanted to take the ride as my manager thought it would win. And he says he made a big error, and it was, you know, so
it was first past the post.
For a while.
The first time.
So, you know, extraordinary sort of situation of everyone has extreme sympathy for him, and it wasn't a deliberate thing, and so on. But and it's hard not to be sympathetic to Michael Poy. He went on to say, oh, and now I'm going to be remembered as the jockey. No matter how many Group 1s I may go on to win, you know, I'm only going to be remembered for that one thing. And so it's an extraordinary situation in racing, but the other side of the equation is with the direct connection to the wagering dollar is an error like that has a very direct correlation to punters losing their money in circumstances where they had no control over the result of the race. And
that's why the penalty is what the penalty is.
I think that's why. And Dean Lister made an interesting point a couple of weeks ago when I was saying, oh, look, the penalty should stand. And he said, well, there is a difference between a precedent of, say, 15 years ago. I think it was Reece McLeod, is that we race more often now, so therefore Poy is actually being penalised heavier because he's been penalised the same amount of time but more race meetings because we have more race meetings in between. So that was an interesting point, but it's just this whole thing with racing where with the game, with the onus on the participant because of the pressure of the gambling dollar and the gambling public, and they are investing in your what you do. But you know what? How does it relate, Whitey? Like if you innocently incorrectly mark your card after the last round at Augusta, what do you get pinged?
Disqualified.
There you go.
It's over.
Yeah. So
if you sign the wrong card,
golf is the one sport where the rules make the game. So. Yeah. And it's incredible how honest they all are that they will put penalties penalties on themselves that no one else has seen what's happened and they will do it. But you know, probably the best way of comparing what Michael Poy did in a golfer is signing an incorrect scorecard where they completely innocently made a mistake, but you're disqualified, and there is no grey on it.
No correspondence will be entered into.
No, so the best one, Matty, I can remember from what we're sort of talking about here is in a USPGA final round, Dustin Johnson. He grounded his club in a bunker, and he was going to win against Martin Keimer, and they went to the video footage, and it was he thought it was just wasteland. He didn't think it was an actual bunker, so he grounded his club innocently, played the shot, and whatever else, and then got back and got sort of told, you didn't have a four, you've had
like
a five. No, it was like trampled down because people had been standing in at the galleries and all
that. You can't stand in a bunker. I'm with Dustin Johnson.
Yeah. Well, I think he's a bit stiff.
It was a really controversial thing, but it was like, well, that's golf. You know, they've got really strong rules and that's just what happens. Now, that's probably the sport that I think relates most to racing where there are rules
and not
so much as governed because of the wagering.
And with golf there is still wagering, but that's not the factor. The factor is the upholding the strict traditions of the etiquette of the game. I mean, I got told off at Bowen Heads once because my socks weren't pulled up when I was walking around. So, true story. I came around on one of those little thingos and said, oi. Up. So
that's old school.
But AFL, like if someone is accidentally kicks it the wrong way and kicks a point and the other team wins or a goal and becomes a point to the other team, that's just a shrug the shoulders, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. But there's no, the penalty regime in the AFL, even though there's heavy gambling on the AFL, it's not the onerous, it's not as onerous when it comes to the weight of pressure of the punter,
no,
is it?
No, it's not as I mean, the whole industry is funded by the bloody punter, isn't it, effectively? So I can understand why there's a fairly significant penalty. And it's his job to know how long the race is, in fairness. If you break it really down, it's his job to know how long the race is.
Oh, look, I agree, but I feel enormous sympathy. Remember the Grand Prix at Albert Park years ago where Rubens Barrichello stopped to let his teammate go past and win? Rubens Barrichello, made him on backed him at 20-1. He's going, what's his, is he broken down? He said, no, he's let his mate come through the number one driver, and then he just followed him home.
Wary of that team
and
orders.
I think the Grand Prix changed its rules after that because I thought, well, what about the poor old punter who's seen Rubens just slow down?
Now they do it more subtly these days. The team orders are just going to phase three. And the other one goes, vroom, like that, goes past him. Matthew, we've got to roll.
Good on you.
Nice to see you as always. We'll get to a break. The early mail coming up after this. We are racing today. Where are we today? We're at Ballarat. Looking forward to it.
Dowling Forest.
Dowling Forest. What a place to be. We'll do it after this.